This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for being with us today. I'm Mitch Tite.
And I'm Bonnie North. If you have listened to public radio for just about any length of time, you have probably heard of David Sedaris, the best-selling author of books such as Me Talk Pretty One Day, Barrel Fever, and his most recent Calypso, has been a staple on This American Life and before that Morning Edition for years. Sedaris' live events are also immensely popular, partly for his deadpan and hilarious readings, but also for the signing and conversation lines that can last well into the night.
I have had the good fortune to introduce David Sedaris on stage in Milwaukee several times, but I had never had the chance for a proper sit-down conversation and interview with him. But that changed when we spoke backstage at Boswell Book Company before his recent appearance to read from the paperback edition of Calypso. We should note our conversation took some clinical but mature turns along the way. David Sedaris, it is a great pleasure to speak with you.
Oh, I'm delighted.
Well, and I feel like public radio interviews always start with that pleasantry, like, thank you for taking a few minutes to talk, but they never continue down the pleasantry road. So let me ask you this. How are you? How is your trip here?
I just started my book tour yesterday. So I have nothing to complain about, and I'm really fresh.
You know, it's one of those things that you hear about among entertainers or musicians or whoever, that the audience doesn't care whether the flight here was good or bad. They just want a good show. But I get the feeling that people actually, they actually are interested in what the trip was like for you in some way.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't like it when I check into a hotel and they say, how was your trip in? Because they don't, it's just not a good question. I mean, most people are going to say fine. I mean, as a matter of fact, you know, I arrived at the airport and found that all of my flights had been not canceled, but the travel agency didn't pay on time, and so all of my tickets were canceled, right? So it was a huge pain in the ass, but it wasn't interesting. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't... It wasn't like an altercation with someone on the plane or, you know, it's the kind of thing nobody would want to hear about except the people whose job it was to, you know, to make sure the tickets weren't canceled. So that kind of thing is just, and really nobody wants to hear about it. So, but it's like when people say, how are you? Like, a couple months ago, a doctor stuck a wire up my penis.
I have had that experience.
Into my bladder. And then for the first time when people said, how are you? I would say, well, actually. And that's the only time I was thinking, oh, I hope they ask how I am, because I felt like I had something, a really good story.
To run the risk of actually relating this to Calypso for a second, one of the themes that seems to come through it is like this sort of gradual change that takes place and then the sudden realization that the change has been taking place all along.
Well, you know, I've just reached the age, and it just seemed to happen overnight, where people say, sir, are you okay to go through the metal detector? And I think, what are you raising your voice for? I was in a hotel, and the internet wouldn't work, and it said go downstairs and get a code. So I go downstairs, and the guy behind the desk says, you need to put your name where it says name and then your room number. I said, you know I must seem terribly old to you, but actually, I do this every day. So I just became overnight, seemingly, where you say, hey, buddy, you dropped something. Now it's, excuse me, sir, you dropped something. So now I'm sir all of a sudden, which... Again, I suppose, I mean, 62 years old, I suppose it makes sense, you know. But a lot of people said when this last book came out, oh, it's so much darker. And it wasn't a conscious choice, but, you know, as you get older, you know, your friends start dying and people get cancer and they get parts of themselves lopped off. And it just comes with the territory, you know, it's just part of aging.
I wonder, I mean, you have this large family that you come from, and is there a point in your family's existence and age where, you know, when you think about your family sitting around in, you know, at the holidays or something, is there an age that you imagine that they're all frozen at?
I was writing something about this a while ago. You know that, like, golden age where you're at a restaurant with your parents and somebody comes up, a stranger walks up to the table and says to your father, "What a beautiful family you have." You know, I've signed books before and I've had those people in that golden age come up. You know, maybe the kids are age like 17 through like 25, 22 or 25. And, you know, the parents are kind of still young enough. It was such a beautiful, it's such a beautiful time in the life of a family. And, I know this sounds phony, but I'm okay with getting older, but I can't bear to see my sisters get older. It just hurts me so much. I just don't think it's fair. They were so beautiful. And they're not complaining about me, but I can't bear it.
Well, and I mean, I think that about my wife. I think that about my kids who are, you know, in their teens. I mean, I feel like, you know, I'm having nostalgia in advance. Like preemptory nostalgia. I was thinking about the first time I remember listening to you on public radio. I don't even remember honestly what the essay was, but it was at a time probably before I would have emailed someone a link to it. So it's a while now.
Exactly.
I guess I'm thinking about if it had been later. You write about being the struggling writer who, you know, maybe had $100 in your checking account when you go to check it on the ATM. Do you think if you had been the struggling writer in, say, 2005, would you have become a blogger?
I often wonder that, because I meet so many people and they, you know, maybe they self-publish something or maybe they have a blog and then they say, well, I just want to get it out there. And there's a lot to be said for not getting it out there, you know. So I started writing when I was 20, and I don't think anyone saw, outside of letters, a word that I had written until I was 28. And I'm glad of that, because it's just, I think people would have looked at what I'd written and said, okay, well, he's no good. And then I don't know that they would have given me a second chance. So I don't know. I just felt like I kind of sort of waited until I suspected that the time was right. So I hoped that I wouldn't have. But, you know, I often ask myself the same thing. If I were 20, would I have a tattoo? You know, I mean, I'm 62 and I don't have one and I don't plan on getting one. But if I was 20 years old and everyone around me. So I guess the thing, I feel like when I was like 14, I needed to do what everyone around me was doing to try to at least fit in some small way, or not to draw too much attention to myself. But I feel like that was the last time I felt the pressure to do that.
Yeah. You write in Calypso about being short. In fact, a few years ago, during one of the times that I introduced you on stage here in Milwaukee, you came out and I think you noted that we could have swapped clothes that night. I know you're right, you don't feel shafted by the height you ended up with, but what's your take on the way society seems to honor the opposite, largeness, you know, the catalogs and the stores catering to big and tall men, but not one specializing. As far as I know, there's not a shop out there that I've found for short and slight men.
Well, my friend Max Brooks told me about a place in Los Angeles that specializes in short men, and he gets all of his suits there, and I don't remember the name of it. But what I always, if I had 100 wishes, I would not wish to be any taller than I am. If I had a choice of being taller or being shorter, I'd go with shorter. And the only thing that bothers me is when tall men think that they have something I want. And I don't want what they have. Absolutely not interested in it. I just never saw the benefit. But it was funny, the Washington Post has this column where they send two people on a date, right? And then they have deal breakers. Each person talks about, you know, well, I wouldn't never pass. I draw the line. And there were these. They sent these two gay guys on a date, and their deal breaker was short men. Not Nazis. not murderers, right? That was okay as long as they weren't short. I guess I'm just so puzzled by that because it would never, I don't know, it would just never occur to me. That would never, it would not be, when I see guys who are shorter than me, like, I mean, if I could shrink you, I'd do it. But then I don't necessarily want to be the taller one.
I don't remember. Have you written about how is Hugh taller than you?
Oh yeah, Hugh is. I don't know. Like he's 6'10". I mean, no, 5'10".
Okay.
You know, 5'10" or 5'11", something like that.
And it is not it is not an issue in your relationship.
Mm-mm, no.
This is a strange. I guess these have all been kind of strange questions. So I'm about to move, and pretty much every, I'm moving to Northern New York. I'm taking a job, managing North Country Public Radio in far Northern New York.
Where?
It's at St. Lawrence University in Canton.
Oh.
Or as we like to refer to it, suburban Montreal, about 2 hours south of Montreal. I have been in this job, hosting this show, for 13 years, and with that as the preface, reading this book and thinking about change, would you prefer your change quickly or slowly, as far as major transitions in your life go?
Gosh, probably I would say slowly. I mean, I wish I were more adaptable to change. Who was I with a while ago, and they were so refreshing to be with, just because they embraced everything. You know, like, sometimes you wind up and you're sitting around with people, and then you start crabbing about, especially when you're crabbing about young people, then you think, I don't know about this. This, like, seems like this is a bad road to go down, because how does that make me any different than my dad, my own dad, you know? And so I was with somebody who just kind of embraced everything. And I thought, God, that's the person I want to be. But I think maybe it's better. It's easier for me to kind of slowly ease into it. That said, I mean, a change in my life, like I'm happy, always happy to, like, you know, if Hugh were to say, look, we're moving to Germany tomorrow, I'd say, okay. And I would look forward to it. Like a change like that for myself, great. I don't need 2 years to get used to the idea. I'll just go ahead and do it. But like a change in the country or something being phased out. Hugh and I just got a place in New York City, and you know, so many storefronts are empty and stores are just dying. You know, people are buying everything online. Not me, but everybody else is buying everything online and stores are dying. So would I rather wake up tomorrow and they're just gone? I'm not ready for that. So give me like 30 years.
Right. It's hard to watch the sort of atrophying of the retail sector.
Well, you know, it's just, I think the computer ate people's jobs. And then those people are eating other people's jobs, you know, because, you know, they're trying to save money because... I think I'm the only person I know who's making more money than he made 10 years ago. And I blame the computer for everything.
I think at some level, maybe the question that was at the heart of it is, you know, there are times when something like that's happening that to me, I kind of just wish I could flash forward those 2 years or 4 years or 5 years and see how it comes, you know, almost like opening a book to the last page or the last chapter, just to kind of gauge, you know, if it's going to go this way, let's get there already.
Well, that's funny. The New York Times contacted me today and they want me to write an op-ed piece from the future. And they're not really looking for Grimm. You know, I mean, you can go that direction if you want to. But, and so I just started wondering what that would be like. I'm not very good at, I mean, sometimes it's amazing to walk down the street and you think, oh my God, this is exactly what I thought the future was going to look like. Like, everybody's connected to a device and my phone rings and then I'm talking into my watch. And this is exactly what, well, not exactly, right. I mean, but when did this happen?
No, people aren't wearing fedoras quite as much as they seem to think we would. We're talking at Boswell Book Company just a few minutes before you're going to do a reading, and then you kind of have this open signing line that could last a long time. It probably will last a long time. What do you like about meeting people for those 10 seconds or minute and a half or whatever?
Well, it works for me. Like, if I were at a cocktail party or something, I would be very uncomfortable. Partly because I think you talk to someone and then you think, oh, am I boring them? Do they want to get away? Or else you think, how am I going to get away? But this is kind of perfect because I sit at a table and people come to me. And then it kind of ends when I hand them the book back. But in the meantime, some amazing things can happen. I've talked to a doctor last night who told me, and she was a physician. She's becoming a psychiatrist, and told me about the great number of men who are convinced that their penises are retracting back into their bodies, and so they tie weights to them. Who on earth would ever suspect this was a thing, right? And then, so just something like that can just kind of keep me going. You know, you ask a few questions, and all of a sudden you're talking about something like that, and I just live for that. And I can't wait to go home and put it in my diary.
Well, and at a certain level, you kind of go into each encounter knowing what the, I hate this metaphor, but the rules of engagement are. I mean, this is the way this conversation will play out, and you don't have to think about the organic way to go up to someone at a cocktail party and just start talking.
Well, I think it's a bit different, too, because I'm sort of allowed to ask any question that I want, so it's a different kind of encounter. The problem is that then I go back to my hotel, and I'll be at the check-in desk, and I'll say to the woman behind the counter, are those your real teeth? You can't be doing that.
Well, we've managed to talk about penises twice in the course of this conversation, so I say job well done. I wish you years of urinary health.
Thank you so much.
David Sedaris, a real pleasure.
Thanks.
Writer David Sedaris speaking with us before a recent reading at Boswell Book Company.
You can hear more interviews like this one by visiting the Lake Effect page at wuwm.com.